Welcome to the We Like Sports podcast, a podcast about fantasy football. I am John Murphy. With me, as always, are my co-hosts, Christian Yegnazar and Jack Ensminger. How are you guys doing?
We are qualified, I swear.
We are very qualified to do this podcast, yes. This is a brand new podcast that we are creating just for you guys to talk about our experiences playing fantasy football and how you should play fantasy football, too.
Yeah.
We do not do very intense data research. That's for actual professionals, not us.
We like sports.
We like sports.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of college students.
Yeah, we're just three college students who went to high school together, coming together to create a fantasy football podcast.
And we're oddly good at fantasy football.
We're very good at fantasy football.
Yeah.
Now, today's episode, to start us off, for all you new listeners about fantasy football, we are going to be talking about draft strategy 101 in general and how to draft players in different types of leagues and the different like elements that go into creating a good fantasy football team that you're going to be happy with your entire year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to get us started, we're going to give a quick run through of some of the different types of leagues that you can find yourself in or join. So let's begin with the standard league. So this is the league that most people will find themselves in. And so the standard league, John can run through the scoring breakdown for a standard league.
The scoring breakdown for standard league. So in general, I think this is how it works. We tend to play on NFL.com, but I'm pretty sure it's the same across platforms for like ESPN or Yahoo.
It is.
A quarterback gets 1 point for every 25 yards they pass. A passing touchdown is worth 4 points for a quarterback or anyone else who might throw a passing touchdown, such as Corey Clement to Nick Foles in the Super Bowl. Interceptions thrown are minus 2 points. A rushing yard is 1 point for every 10 yards. A rushing touchdown is worth 6 points. A receiving touchdown is worth 6 points as well. Receiving yards, 1 point per 10 yards, just like rushing. A fumble recovered for a touchdown by a defense or by an offensive player is worth 6 points. A fumble lost is worth minus 2 points. And a two-point conversion is worth 2 points for any player involved. In terms of kicking, a PAT is worth 1 point. Like actual scoring. This might vary from league to league. Some leagues, it's 3 points for any other type of kick. For our league, we do 5 points for 50-plus yard field goals. I think that's cool.
Yeah. And then for, like, the rest of the leagues, these scores hold constant and just, like, little variations that change it up.
Yeah, and then the last thing we got to run through is defense and special teams. So you draft a defense and special teams if you're new to fantasy football. 1 point for a sack, 2 points for an interception, 2 points for a fumble recovered, 2 points for safety, 6 points for touchdowns, and kickoff and punt returns and like different amounts of points allowed are worth various amounts of points.
All right, the second type of league are PPR league or points per reception leagues. These leagues are very weighted towards wide receivers and receiving backs, such as Duke Johnson and Danny Woodhead. Danny Woodhead's constantly one of the best running backs in these leagues. That's because every time a player gets a reception, they get an additional point. So receiving backs in these leagues are heavily weighted because every time they get a reception, they get a point, which is 10 yards automatically. But besides that, the league, the scoring is pretty constant with standard leagues. You just get an extra point for every reception.
Yeah,
it just weighs wide receivers as more valuable than running backs, and among other positions.
I think when it was created, if you look at the history of PPR, like it was created to offset the fact that running backs were more valuable than wide receivers. But in today's passing-heavy NFL, it really, in my opinion, I prefer to play in standard because it imbalances it.
I don't like how running backs like Danny Woodhead are some of the best players in fantasy football when they're not even close to the best.
Right. It's just a little bit unweighted. And so next, we're just going to briefly go over IDP, so individual defensive player. Our league played this 1 year. It's very different. So essentially, as we went over, you have an offense, but instead of drafting an entire team's defense, you draft an individual players on defense. So you draft defensive linemen, linebackers, safeties, or defensive backs. And then each one gets you points individually. This league is it's pretty tough because defenses are very deep and there's always rotations happening. And also it's just hard to get consistent performance out of defensive players, no matter who, how good they are.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you can get, of course, J.J. Watt's going to get you a couple sacks a game, but that's, it's, other than that, there's not, like, besides, like, major impact players, you're not going to find players that are going to give you consistency. So it's a very tough league.
It's also weird because, like, defensive players that you would normally think are very good oftentimes, like, do not get very many points. So, for example, because points can often be based around, like, tackles or big plays, Richard Sherman is almost going to get you no points a week because nobody even throws to him.
No one used to throw to him.
Apparently, I don't know. I personally think Sherman's on his way back, but we can disagree on that later if we want to. Yeah.
Next, we have Dynasty League. So, Dynasty League...
Wait, one more thing about IDP. I read an article online about how there's generally two types of scoring. Like, you can either have, like, a scoring system that's more oriented towards like big plays, or a system that's more oriented towards tackles and single stats, and then sometimes there's some combination of both. Really, with that, I think the point is, like, if you're playing an IDP league, know your league settings and know who's
absolutely
good.
Yeah. So next we have a dynasty league. So dynasty leagues are essentially just like, it's a league that lasts 20 years and you have the same players over and over again. And every year you basically draft a rookie class. So this league is like, obviously, when you're drafting for this league first time, you're looking for good young players. So, for instance, Drew Brees and Tom Brady would not be ideal as they only have a few years left in the league. But Jameis Winston would honestly be a higher draft pick than probably Drew Brees or Tom Brady, depending on who you're talking to, just because he just has a higher, he just has more lifetime in the NFL.
Unless you're trying to win now.
Yeah, there's also the win now strategy, and then you draft a quarterback later. It just depends.
I don't know. I really want to join a dynasty league.
Like, yeah,
at some point. I tried to create a dynasty league, and I did a really bad job of it because I created it like when I didn't understand how it worked, and tried to incorporate into league settings. I want to do like one with like an email draft where like it's like all set up and like we have people who are gonna be consistent, because I think that would be really
cool. The key part of a dynasty league is you find people that are consistent. Are committed, because if you don't, it just messes everything.
Yeah, because I mean, even if you have people who have a bad team, you want somebody who's like actively trying to rebuild their bad team.
Right.
I also think in terms of win now versus like draft for the future, like, I mean, this is just a rule in general about fantasy football and about drafts in general. You want to like come into any situation in fantasy football from a position of strength. So I would prefer a win now, because then you can trade away your win now players for like draft picks after you win.
Mm.
You know.
Also, Tom Brady might be playing for another 20 years. No one knows.
Good point.
That guy doesn't get worse. So the next type of league is Daily Fantasy, which is for those people who want to do fantasy football but don't want the whole season commitment. It's a week by week.
Is this a Vandal commercial?
It's a week by week thing where you draft or you choose new players every week who you think will do well, and it's tends to be a money gaining opportunity.
It's
you
legal.
Bet, yeah, it's a legal way to bet money and make money depending on how well your team does.
Yeah. I've never played Daily Fantasy.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like it's basically an auction type of draft. We'll get to that a little bit later, but. You assemble your team with a set budget. Each player costs a different amount. You compete with other people who have bought in, and whoever wins gets the money. It's pretty cool. Like Jack said, it's for people who don't want the commitment and who want to maybe make a little bit of money.
Yeah, and finally we got the best ball draft. Best ball drafts are actually happening right now, because what you do in a best ball draft is for a best ball league is, you draft a team with a very, very deep bench, And then as the season goes on, it starts your best lineup for you every single week. So you can literally join as many best ball leagues as you want because it's no work to maintain them. And then it'll just set your lineup every single week in terms of who scores the best. And if you hit on your sleeper picks now, you're going to have a great best ball team and win your best ball leagues.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's cool. All right, well, moving on now to our next segment about draft strategy.
Draft strategy.
And different types of drafting and who you should draft first and other preparation resources. All right, so one resource that I love to use are magazines. It's not a typical resource anymore since it's print, but I love them. So some of the magazines that I use are RotoWire, Sports Illustrated, Athlon, CBS Sports, USA Today. And the reason I like magazines is it's just I love seeing the player rankings in person, and then I can also write notes in the magazines. And I can also see mock drafts and write notes on every single thing in the magazines, which helps me visualize different things. It's also with magazines, it's important that whenever you go out and buy magazines, you check the publishing date, and you want to make sure that you get it very close to the publishing date, or that no major development has happened in the league. Only because if one player goes down, let's say David Johnson, like last year, everything changes. And magazines obviously can't change after they've been printed. So definitely make sure you check the publishing date. Magazines are great to take notes in. That's my favorite resource to prepare for fantasy drafts. Jack, you want to talk about what you'd like to do?
Yes, I'm a fan of printing out player ranking sheets online, similar to Christian with magazines. I print out Sports Illustrated, which is my favorite. The reason I like player ranking sheets is it doesn't overcomplicate things. I enjoy coming up with my own system of highlighting different players so I can visualize how far down players are. I mark off players when they've been drafted so I know when my guys are coming up on the ranking sheets, which a lot of people tend to use. So you can get your guys before another player grabs them, your sleeper picks. You can mark those. I use color coding to decide which guys I want when, which I highly recommend. It keeps things organized and doesn't leave you missing a player on accident. You get all the players you intended to get, leaving out some weird thing or a team in your league drafts someone early that you intended to get late. But for the most part, you don't make mistakes.
Right, yeah.
And me on the kind of polar opposite end from Christian with the magazine, I'm a big, big proponent of the internet and podcasts. Humble brag, kind of have a very busy life. And on the go, I like to listen to podcasts.
You should listen to this one.
Next yeah, time. Yeah, I should listen to this one on like my ride to work or whatever. I think the podcasts are a really easy way that, like, if you have a... I don't know, like, if you have a lot of free time with, and you're just doing something, like boring for, like, repeatedly hours on end, so, like, if I ever have to, like, commute for something, like, I would love to listen to podcasts for, like, an hour, and then I can hear, like, 2 hours.
Do you have any recommendations?
Besides
We Like Sports.
Besides We Like Sports, of course. I personally have a soft spot for the NFL Fantasy Live podcast from NFL.com.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to it since I was in high school, and I think late in the season around the playoffs, it has caused me to make more bad starts than good starts, but I really, really like the guys who do the podcast. They're very, very smart.
That's good.
And they have a really, really good, like, fun dynamic. I think, but, like, what I think really, like, helped me is when I started, like, diversifying my resources into other podcasts.
Yeah.
I think the Fantasy Pros podcast is great because they bring on guests
from,
like, all over fantasy sports knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
They got J.J. Zacharyson on there all the time.
Right.
Those two are really, really good. Yeah, and I like to, like, look at ranking sheets, too. But I also like looking at, like, articles on the internet, because I feel like articles can also, like, give you a good, like, theoretical perspective on, like, how you want
to
draft.
And I think just something important to add on is that a lot of you guys might be doing online drafts, so not in person with other people. But I would still recommend and think it's extremely important that you have a lot of print stuff, player ranking sheets wise, only because a lot of the rankings on like NFL.com, ESPN, Yahoo Sports, all these different draft rooms, their rankings are extremely questionable, and you might lose a player that's really good or has extremely high value deep down the list, and then you just don't see it. So I would highly recommend at least having a print.
They don't like re-update their like draft clientele enough, so you really need to like know who you're looking for if you go into an offline draft, an online draft. I mean,
also those of you who have done fantasy before, and letting those of you who haven't know about this, at least once in every draft I've ever had, at least, there will be one player who at some point super late, someone will be like, wait, this player has not been drafted yet.
Yeah, always.
A couple rounds past where they should have been drafted because people just lost track of them.
Yeah, totally.
So that's a big reason why you want to have printout sheets. I also use the internet. The way I use the internet is look at my player ranking sheets and research each player individually, see how they did in previous years against previous teams in different conditions, injury history, age, how they progressed. And yeah, so I use the internet to research players on my players' ranking sheet, so it's definitely a good...
Also, just side note about fantasy football in general and what's great about it. We have a league together with a bunch of our friends from high school that you're probably going to hear us talk about and like reference on this podcast a bunch going forward. But every year, this league does an offline draft. And for those of you who have never done an offline draft, I highly recommend it. It's a lot of work to get people together, but it's so much fun to just like sit down with your friends and like have a draft. And like, especially for us now being in like college or like going off to college like last year, like it's really good to like bring people together and like reconnect.
Mm-hmm. Also, in this kind of draft, you can trade draft picks, which is something I've had a lot of success doing.
Get out of here.
The first year, in a 12-person league, I traded the 12th and 13th pick for, I believe, the 6th and sort of been 16th pick. Yeah. And that worked out quite well for me. And
ended up winning the league.
So. I ended up winning the league that year, thanks to that trade. And along with that, you get, with an offline draft, you give players the ability to draft players who have retired. Which is a lot of fun when someone takes a player that's just not in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that happens with an offline draft is that, like, sometimes, like, we'll just forget to, like, we'll accidentally cross someone off the ranking sheet, and then when you, like, check the waivers, like, the first day, you're like, oh, no, like, seventh round, supposed to be seventh round pick Devontae Parker is, like, still on the waiver wire, you know? But I think it's more fun that way.
Definitely haven't tried it yet. Try it. It's worth it.
Yeah, it's very, very worth it. So, I mean, then I think we really go forward to, like, how, once you get to the draft, whether it's offline or online, how are you going to draft?
And like, 1,000 feet up in the air, what are you going
to
do?
I think the greatest rule is, and I was talking to someone about this yesterday, actually, draft for value. Like, think about it. Like, if you think that, like, Odell Beckham, for example, is, like, the greatest player known to man, don't take Odell Beckham with your number one pick, because this year you can get Odell Beckham later. So, like, you should take someone else who you also think is very good in round one, who's supposed to go in round one, and then wait to take Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
So, basically, that way you can capitalize and get, like, the person you think is the greatest player of all time, plus David Johnson.
Right.
You know? And then suddenly you got David Johnson and Odell Beckham, and, like, you're really liking the way your draft is looking rather than when you took Odell Beckham in the first round.
Right, and a key stat that you want to look at for that is ADP, so average draft position. So you can get a read on where, so it's like basically accumulates all the drafts, mock drafts, whatever, and sees where are these players going, like what picks are they going. So if you see OBJ going second round, don't draft him in the first round because you can get him in the second round. Draft David Johnson in the first round. And, I mean, even David Johnson might go after. So,
For example, last year I was able to, because of people that weren't drafting for value, I was able to get Antonio Brown ADP 2 or 3 last year at 6 because of players taking their favorite players early, who they thought were good, despite them being able to go in the 4th or 5th round.
Right. There's a guy in our league who like only takes Carolina Panthers players. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't take Christian McCaffrey with the 3rd pick.
He somehow beats me every. I don't know how. Yeah. And then so moving on to, I mean, I guess it's a more old-fashioned standard type of fantasy draft. This is what I love to do. Work for me. Is basically running back early. So you want to get a running back first round. And basically the logic behind this is that running backs are extremely rare. Good running backs are extremely rare. So you're not going to find a lot. There's about, I would say, two to three elite backs. And then after that, maybe like 10, if that, good backs that you'd be confident starting every week. No matter what the matchup is. And so you want one of those on your team, 100%. At least if you're going to go with this strategy. And then a key part of this strategy also is taking a QB very late. I'm a huge proponent of this. I think quarterbacks should not be taken until... I would not take a quarterback until after the 6th. I wouldn't even think after the 6th round. Of course, if there's like... If you have Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees... there in the 6th round, I'll pick him up. But like the likelihood is people are going to take the top quarterbacks rounds like 2 to 4. And so every year that we've done this draft, in every league that I'm in, I'm always the last person that takes a quarterback. Last year I ended up with Matthew Stafford, who, like you guys know, is a great fantasy quarterback, and he was the last quarterback taken.
On that note, the thing about quarterbacks is that in standard fantasy scoring, like, quarterbacks, they all kind of have the same value to each other. So, like, when you think about, like, quarterbacks in the NFL, like, sure, Aaron Rodgers is, like, a way better quarterback than Blake Bortles. Like, we all just know that. But in fantasy football, the numbers get too similar just based on the statistics of how it works. Now, sometimes some leagues do play with 6-point passing touchdowns, which means that a quarterback is better.
Don't play like that.
Here's the thing: it's like we gotta just. I think the debate on that is like we gotta decide like are we moving towards a more like a fantasy football league that's trying to emulate football more, or are we just or is it its own game entirely? And I tend to think it's its own game entirely.
Yeah.
Now I kind of disagree with you though on like. The QB late approach in terms of after the 6th round, I think there's a mid-range of QBs in which you can get, like tricked. So what I mean by that is, like, I think there's some quarterbacks such as... And you can debate who these guys are. I personally think it's Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson this year, who, like, if they are still there, like, in, like, round 3 or 4, mm-hmm. I would... immediately pull the trigger to take.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I would because also...
they just offer a statistical advantage.
Right, and I mean, I think... I mean, just hearing Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, I'd also throw in Carson Wentz.
Yeah, you can debate Carson Wentz on
I
that
think,
list. You
I think Deshaun that... Watson I think, and I... Going back to last year's draft, I got Carson Wentz second to last round.
Yeah, which brings me to my other point, is that like, there's a mid-range of quarterbacks there that people are going to try to sell you on as being really, really good.
Yeah.
But that really you kind of want to wait late. Like, if you look at ADP right now, like, you can get Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, Patrick Mahomes, Jimmy Garoppolo for, like, basically free right now.
Yeah.
And those guys are all going to put up, like, monster seasons.
Yeah. I mean, it's just all going to the point, like, do not draft a quarterback early.
Yeah. My quarterback strategy is following... I want to get as many... non-quarterback players as I can. I stack up my receiver and running back core early. And I never go into a draft with a quarterback with a round that I want to take a quarterback in.
Yeah.
Christian wants to take a quarterback last. I'm more of a mid-range guy where I usually take a quarterback where they start flying off the board. People panic and just there's one round that's just straight quarterbacks a lot of times. I usually take one in there so I don't end up with the last quarterback. I want to end up with a mid-range quarterback who is putting up 12 points a game. He's putting up more like 18 points a game, so not elite. He's not a Tom Brady or Russell Wilson per se, but
I kind of disagree because I think there's an opportunity to get tricked in there because like
there is
you I mean like for example like
you just have to my thing is you just have to know who you would want to take. Like, I'm not going to take the next quarterback up if the next quarterback up is Blake Bortles, who I don't think is going to be great. But if the next quarterback up is a mid-range Kirk Cousins with Adam
Thielen, I totally disagree about Kirk Cousins. I think that I would never take Kirk Cousins this year, and part of that is because the Vikings defense is too good, and Dalvin Cook is their runner, and so they are going to be a defensive game script minded team where they run the ball with Dalvin Cook, and Kirk Cousins is efficient when he throws, but he doesn't throw often enough.
See, here's my response to that is that the Vikings. Yes, they were the best team at defense in the league last year. They went to the NFC Championship game last year. Case Keenum, a perennial journeyman, never been a great quarterback, was a top five MVP vote getter last year.
Yeah, but that's because he was like playing like almost perfect, and I think like weirdly enough, there's a chance to regress from Case Keenum's play last year to Kirk Cousins.
I disagree strongly. I don't think Case Keenum's a good quarterback. I think he benefited from the Vikings system.
I'm not saying the Vikings are going to be bad.
I know what you're saying.
Kirk Cousins is not who I want to take.
I think he's a mid-range quarterback who's going to surprise
me. Yeah, I think, and I mean we'll get into positional rankings, on later episodes. But just bringing it back a little bit to where you take a quarterback, I think you do not. I would never have a quarterback in mind that I want to take. I love to just guess or just get who I get and then have a decision between like two or three people. And so like Jack said, there's often a round where quarterbacks will fly off the board. And wherever that happens is usually around like 5 to 7, right?
I would say about 7.
7?
I mean, it's different from league to league. So if you're playing a league, our league is very, very competitive, and we understand the value of a quarterback. So I feel like that tends to be around like round 7. But
right.
I feel like if you play in a league that maybe understands fantasy football less, it's going to be more like round 5.
Right. So I think that round is the perfect opportunity to have your team make a leap and surpass every other one, because everyone's taking quarterbacks. Guess what? Somebody's falling to you that's not a quarterback, whether that be a running back or a wide receiver. And so that person has just fallen to you, so you take them. And then that way you have another player who's far superior to any other wide receiver, running back, tight end at that level. And then you get a quarterback later that's a little bit worse. And I think that's the strategy that I use, and it's worked for me in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's not like far different than that strategy.
And I think the other thing on that is with that regard in terms of positions you take late, also tight ends. I feel like I definitely pass on the tight end position like a lot of times. Yeah, I usually try to find a sleeper who I really think is going to break out like in the later rounds.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you guys who I think that is, because you guys are in the same league as me. Maybe on a later episode I will.
Discuss who this doesn't matter anymore. So I'll discuss what my thing in the past has been with tight ends, and my thing in the past with tight ends has been Jason Witten.
Well, good thing he's still in the league.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that's why I'm, unlike John, who like wants to get this player from us. I can say this because he's gone. Jason, the reason I like Jason Witten as tight end is because you can get him late. In the past seasons, he's never been an exciting option at tight end, really. But he consistently gets the same number of points every week.
Yeah, that's
He never just has a 2-point game. It's always 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So you can count on him to get those 6 or 7 points.
Yeah.
Be a red zone target. So I've always liked
Jason. Yeah, I think Antonio Gates was a lot like that.
There was just no risk with him.
And I think
you can take your risks with other players and just have a safe bet.
Right. And I think there's something off that line of thinking. There's something to be said about consistency and consistency in players. and one of those is Jason Wynn. Antonio Gates was one. You might have a boomer bust player, and I off the cusp, tight end Tyler Eifert is one of those. I had him 2 years back, and like John, I got him at, like, at the very end of the draft, and he would either score 4 touchdowns and 20 yards, yeah, which mean and or just drop an egg.
Yeah, tight ends are very tight. All right,
I had a blast.
And so consistency is key, and you definitely want to draft a class that is consist. You have consistent players that you can count on, and then you have boomer bust players.
Yeah, some people like to go big and go like Gronk or Travis Kelce early. I think that's a waste of a draft pick because you want to get your running backs and wide receivers in the first round. I think in general your first four rounds, like first two rounds, I'm probably going running back or a combination of running back and receiver.
Yeah.
And then the second two rounds, I'm probably going two receivers or a running back and a receiver, depending on what I've done.
Yeah. And then just to move on to another, the last draft strategy that we're going to quickly talk about is zero RB.
All right. So I'll discuss this strategy. I'm not a big fan of it, but I understand its merit at some point. So unlike the earlier strategy we talked about, which is RB early because there are a few elite running backs. The idea behind zero RB is you don't draft a running back until very late, stack up on receivers. The reason for this is a lot of running backs break out, like Kareem Hunt in the 8th round in our draft last year. I drafted Spencer Ware somewhat early. It was according to his average draft position. It was a little past it. I thought it was a good pick. Didn't handcuff him, which we'll talk about later. That was a big mistake. And he got injured. And Kareem Hunt. So running backs get injured a lot. And a lot of running backs break out, rookie running backs. So the idea behind this is that you can get your running backs later. And especially since most people do RB early, if you have a late draft position and 10 running backs go off, or not 10, let's say 8 running backs go off the board before you get your first pick, don't take the 9th overall running back when you can take the number 2 wide receiver. So it's really just play it by ear and don't take a running back early if the running back you can get at your position is not a running back you should be going after with the 10th overall pick.
And I mean, I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge proponent of RB early. I want my running backs, and I want them early, and I want them to be good. But a key point in drafting to be a good drafter is you have to be adaptable.
Yeah.
It's a must. So I know that I want running backs early, but if I get the 12th pick in the draft, and like Jack said, 8 running backs off the board, I'm not going to draft a running back. Even though that's what I do, that's my strategy, you have to be adaptable and be able to change. Otherwise, you're going to get screwed.
Just like talking about like value, though, in terms of that, I'm not sure this is the year to go zero RB just because
I agree.
No. The first round is basically all running backs this year. And so you want to like try to grab one of those top tier guys and then go, because like the way the rankings are shaping up, like Julio Jones is probably going to be a second round pick, which means you can score a top tier running back in Julio Jones, theoretically. I'd rather do that. I'd rather score a running back in Julio Jones or a running back in Keenan Allen, you know, like.
Yeah,
I was able to. Last year I didn't do a zero running back strategy, but I did stack my receiving core. I had Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, who ended up being the top two receiver options last year. And then I had Larry Fitzgerald behind them.
Larry Fitzgerald, like, I have the scoring updates, or the scoring leaders from last year. Larry Fitzgerald was the...
He's incredible. Ageless wonder.
Wide receiver 9 last year.
Yeah, so I had three of the top 9
that's insane.
Running backs, or receivers last year. And that's because a lot of receivers came off, or a lot of running backs came off early, and I was able to grab those guys because I wasn't going. My running backs were weaker, but I still ended up... I went to the championship where I lost to Christian, but... But,
did you guys know Marvin Jones was the wide receiver 5 last year? That's insane to me.
Wow.
That's funny.
Sorry, continue, Jack.
Yeah. So the key is being adaptable and not going for one particular strategy and knowing where you are and knowing who's been picked and knowing who should be picked at certain spots.
Yeah. And I think now just to proceed to good draft practices to have during your draft. First, we'll talk a little bit, or John and Jack will talk about handcuffs and handcuffing players.
Jack, do you want to start off?
Yeah, so a handcuff is basically a lot of times with running backs where you think a running back like might get hurt or just risking that they don't get hurt a lot with it happens a lot with Chiefs running backs. Like Jamal Charles always needed a handcuff. But what is you draft the player, and then you draft their backup in a later round. So you have kind of a safety net. Like if one player goes down, the other player just takes right. off. And you don't lose that much. Your team doesn't go down for the season because of an injury, because you have an immediate replacement right there. Mm. Like I said earlier, I drafted Spencer Ware, did not draft Kareem Hunt. He got stolen from me later, and we all know what happened with Kareem Hunt. He was one of the best running backs in the league last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I personally disagree with the philosophy of drafting a handcuff. Because if you think about it, like, if you think of the classic examples of, like, handcuffs in years past that you would have drafted, they're not always, like, the player who ends up getting the starting job when the running back goes down. So, like, the example I always refer to is, I think it was probably 2016, and Jamal Charles went down.
And I had Charkhandrick West.
Yeah, you had Charkhandrick West, but the point was that everybody, like, the moment Jamal Charles went down, everyone rushed the waiver wires for, like, Nile Davis. And you probably don't even remember the name, like, Nile Davis now, because Nile Davis has had no impact on this league, but everyone thought, he's the backup to Jamal Charles.
Yeah.
He's going to get all the touches now. And then suddenly, like, on Thursday of that week, there was a report that, like, Charkhandrick West is getting all the touches.
Yeah.
And so whoever got, like, was lucky enough to get Charkhandrick West, like, won big time.
Yeah.
Another example from last year is I remember in drafts, and I still think he might be a value this year, Joe Williams was getting picked up as the handcuff to Carlos Hyde. And Joe Williams, by the end of the preseason, was injured, and Matt Breida was the handcuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also don't love handcuffs because more often than not, they don't work out. But
I like stealing other people's handcuffs.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is with handcuffs is you don't take them early. You take them at their draft position, maybe slightly above to ensure that you get them. But in the round that they're supposed to be drafted, you don't take them when there's a position with a different player who should be drafted there. So if you took Jamal Charles in the first round, you don't take Nile Davis in the fourth round.
Right.
You take him where he should be going, which is somewhere in the teens.
Yeah. And I think handcuffs are really interesting, especially for running backs, and also a little bit for wide receivers today, because we're seeing a lot of this running back by committee, and this also kind of bleeds into the issue of, do you draft players on the same team? And so I think a major one that we can see is the New Orleans Saints. They have Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, two Pro Bowl players, two of the best running backs in the league, but they're on the same team. Do you draft both of them if you have the opportunity to? And I think that is a really key question, not only for handcuffs and drafting players on the same team. So for me, I have no problem doing that if I get good value for both of them. Because if they're both going to get me points, that's all I care about. There's different, and then also by that same mantra, I also think of that if Alvin Kamara gets 100 yards or it gets a 99-yard run and they're at the 1-yard line and they put Mark Ingram in and he scores a touchdown, guess what? I reap the benefits of that no matter what happens. I know John and Jack disagree with me a little bit there.
Well, okay, so, I mean, it's interesting that you say that because, like, I think we got to distinguish between you drafting the same player on the same team versus, like, a committee situation. Because drafting players on the same team, I just feel like more often than not, a lot of players do cancel each other out. Like, one player, yeah. A lot of players do get featured for a game, and then another one will get featured for another game, and if you start them both, one of your starts will be a dud.
Yeah.
I think with wide receivers, if they're going up against a bad defense, like, that can be different, but it also, like, one guy might shine, the other guy might not. I think quarterback and wide receiver on the same team, though, I kind of actually am okay doing, because they mm-hmm. both benefit from the same things.
Yeah.
The example you gave of Kamara and Ingram, though, I think is interesting, because I think they're a good example of, like, the one backfield this year that, like, I am okay owning I don't think I would want to own shares of both, but I'm okay starting Mark Ingram, even though I think Alvin Kamara is going to get all the touches because Mark Ingram... Like, remember the game with the Bills this past year where they both rushed for, like, 100 yards?
Well,
and, like,
the fact of the matter... I mean, that's like, a really unique situation, but the fact of the matter is Kamara is going to get 15 touches a game, but Mark Ingram is, like, still the bell... Is the bell horse. The bell cow.
Is he?
I think he is.
Well, I think it's more that they're both, like, equal bell cows.
Well, I mean...
Kamara gets the pass catches.
Well, reports coming from the New Orleans Saints training camp is that Kamara's touches are not increasing, and he's okay with that.
Yeah, all right.
I'm just going off of that information.
Yeah, see, I disagree with the players on the same team strategy for the most point, because I, with, like John said, they cancel out a lot, and... My strategy is I want to go in there thinking I have the best potential for each week. I don't want to go in saying at least one of these two players is going to go off.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I want to have all the rushing yards on two teams rather than all the rushing yards on one team. So that's the reason I don't like it with running backs. Again, quarterback, wide receiver can be...
Okay.
One of the best things, because every time there's a touchdown, you get double the points, basically. Also, another reason why I don't like drafting players on the same team is bye weeks. When I'm drafting, I pay attention a lot to bye weeks. Bye week is when one week where a team doesn't play, so those players aren't going to get any points, and every team has one. Your players will be on that bench that week. Some people like to not pay attention to bye weeks and then just go off every week except for the one week where every player on their team has a bye week and then just lose that week, which is usually around week 8, week 9, where a lot of teams start having bye weeks. I go in with the strategy I'm going to win every week, and not give up any weeks, because that one week could be the difference between making the playoffs and not. It could be the difference between seeding. So I pay a lot of attention to bye weeks. I don't like drafting. Even if a player falls to me, if they have the same... If my wide receiver one...
it's an important factor.
Yeah. If my wide receiver one has a bye week 8, and I... Going around my round 3, a player is at me, I have... the option between two players, the wide receiver, let's say overall wide receiver 10 and wide receiver 11. I will take the wide receiver 11 if he has a different bye week than my first player, and the wide receiver 10 has the same bye week.
I totally disagree. I think you shouldn't pay attention to bye weeks whatsoever, and I don't really, because, I mean, here's an example I would give. Last year, my first 5 picks were Le'Veon Bell, Marshawn Lynch, Aaron Rodgers, Terrell Pryor, and Martavis Bryant. And now, when I think about it, the reason I won every week is because my team, when I draft that poorly with my first 5 picks, has to change as to who I'm starting. So if I don't know what their bye weeks were last year, but I'm going to assume someone had the same bye week. But by the time week 8 or week 9, when all those bye weeks are occurring, roll around, I was only still starting Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah,
like, I had dropped Terrell Pryor and Martavis Bryant. I probably dropped Marshawn Lynch, and I probably dropped Aaron Rodgers because he was on IR, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just Le'Veon Bell of those 5 starting. Like, I don't know. It's a situation, like, every single week where, like, you just have to start who you think is going to be the best player. You got to play the matchups.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, when you have 5 wide receivers on your team and 3 of them have the same bye week, and you have to pick up a player to start one week, and that player is going to be a dud because...
But that player's not always a dud. Like, and there were weeks in,
not
like,
always, obviously.
Like 2015 when you picked up Cameron Meredith off like the waiver wire and he goes off for 24. You know,
well,
like,
yeah. Obviously, they're not always duds. Just like any other waiver wire player.
Yeah.
But when you're picking up a player because you require to start them, I don't like having to like struggle to find a running back 3. I want to have. I'm okay with having a couple players at the same position with the same bye week. But I need to have a starting lineup every week that I'm happy with. I don't want to pick up players.
No, that's fair.
Just to start them.
That's fair.
I'll pick up. I'm a big waiver wire guy, but I don't want to pick up players with the sole purpose of starting them because I have to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fair.
I'm gonna pick up a player and start them because I want to.
Yeah, and I think, that's important. I really don't think it's that important because teams change so much throughout the season. You're going to be dropping people, picking people up. I think after you draft, then it's important to reevaluate, see where you're at. See if you can maybe drop one of your late round picks, pick up somebody else, make a few trades a little bit. But I don't think it's like a huge concern. It is an important detail, though, to remember when you're drafting. If you have two equal players, maybe that can set one apart from the other. And another quick thing that we're going to talk about is fantasy football, in the end of the day, is like, it's to have fun. So an important thing that I think we all like to do is get your guys on your team. So I'm a huge Saints fan, so I picked Michael Thomas second round, where he's supposed to go. I didn't overdraft, underdraft. But I wanted him, and he did really well. And it just makes it more fun and more enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, I don't even think it has to be like the Saints. I think like, if you've done your research and you know what players in the later round you think are just going to be like absolute ballers, go out and get that guy. I mean, if I'm being totally honest, that guy was Kareem Hunt for me last year. And my other one was Derrick Henry, which is not as good a choice.
Well, I mean, he's going to be
this year. But, you know, like, so I my steals in the late rounds were Derrick Henry and Kareem Hunt, you know?
His rookie year, so it was not last year, but the year, what was it? I don't remember when it was. I think it was the year before last. Someone took Sterling Shepard from me. Right before I picked him, I made a trade for him. That trade worked out great for me. I love Sterling Shepard going into that draft, despite him being a rookie and going into a team that already had Odell Beckham. Worked out great for me. He was a great. I think he was my fourth wide receiver that year. Was a great plug-in for bye weeks, and he would have been a running back. He was drafted to be in the position to be a running back 6 or 7 or receiver 6 or 7, and he ended up being a great value for me. That was a great pick. He was my guy going in. I loved him. So so
just get your guys.
Don't be afraid to go.
Yeah, it just makes the whole game more
enjoyable. Do your research, and in the late round, like, in terms of the get your guys philosophy, like this is what it gets called a dart throw a lot by analysts, is like, pick a guy that like you think it's a chance to like break out in the late rounds, and like, then don't go by the positional rankings, you know, like, just, you know, go up and get the person you want, you know? Yeah. That's all there is to it.
All right. So, Christian and John, what is your ideal draft position? Like, in a vacuum, where would you draft different positions?
Right. It's a great question. And I think it's a good way to wrap up this episode on draft strategy. For me, I went 2 running backs, first and second round. Then I will, for the next 4 rounds, pick up receivers and tight ends, depending. And then after that, I will continue to pick up running backs and wide receivers. And then after everyone has drafted a quarterback, I will draft a quarterback. Actually, no. After everyone drafts a quarterback, I'll keep probably picking up wide receivers and running backs until people start picking backup quarterbacks. So I can wait as long as possible for the quarterback position, and then last 2 rounds I'll draft a kicker and defense.
Yeah, for me, I feel like I tend to capitalize on value. ADP could totally change. This year I think I'm probably looking at a running back and then a wide receiver. But if ADP changes and it becomes running back, I have no problem with that. The next 2 rounds are probably going to be, if I go running back 1 and 2, I'm probably going wide receiver 3 and 4, or like some combination of it. If there's a really, really like good running back steal in round 4 and I already have 2 running backs, because we play in the league with a flex, I might do that as well.
Yeah.
The other thing, like I talked about earlier, if like Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson are on the board in round 3 of our 14-person league, which is round 4 for most like leagues that have like 10 people in it, if they're available in that round, I'll pull the gun. I'll pull the trigger. I'll pull the gun. I will go for them there. And then I won't, if I don't get them, I'm pretty much taking running backs and wide receivers all the way until like round 9, really. You know? Because I can get sleeper tight ends there, I can get sleeper quarterbacks there, and start them. Yeah. And not even sleeper quarterbacks. Like I said earlier, like Matt Ryan, who had an MVP season, 2 years ago, is not even in the top 14 draft picks at quarterback, like, on ADP.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So for me, my
going back through past drafts, my strategy has been constant. First five rounds tends to be three receivers, two running backs, which is the starting amount. So I get all my starters down in those positions. The earliest non-receiver running back pick I've had in the top five is 2015. I took Drew Brees in the fifth round, who ended up being a great value pick that year. I took Julian Edelman as my third starter in the sixth. Besides that, last year I took in the sixth round, which was my next earliest non-QB pick, I took Eifert. But I tend to get all my starters for running back and receiver down, and before even thinking about other positions, I'll go with quarterback usually around seven. Kicker, I usually go when they start coming off the board. So I want a top end kicker. I don't want to be the first person to draft a kicker. I'll usually be fourth or fifth, because there is a drop off with kickers, but you don't want to draft them anywhere close to the top. No. You want to be
kickers and defenses, very, very
at the end.
Yeah.
If two people draft a kicker in the seventh round, don't draft a kicker, because another one will not go until the 11th round. So
in the last round of last year's draft, I snagged the Jags defense, and they were the number one defense in fantasy football.
Yeah. So just have a list of kickers and defenses that you'd be happy taking. Usually half the defenses will be great. So
we like to have fun on this podcast. And so we were thinking for our last segment, just for fun, we're going to do some hot takes. So for this segment, these takes, some of them as we go along will obviously be fantasy football related, but we just wanted to open this up to like just general football in general. I'll get us started off with a hot take. I think the Seahawks are going to go 5-11 this year.
What?
Yes. I think it's because their roster has become completely just hot trash. There's a quote that I heard somewhere that if the Seahawks did not have Russell Wilson, they would go 5-11. And I think even with Russell Wilson, they're still going to go 5-11. I have their schedule up. Week one, they can beat the Broncos. That's 1-0. But then their next few games of Bears, Cowboys, Cardinals, Rams, you may be shocked to hear me say that I think all of those are losses. I think the Bears have rebuilt their roster so that they have a fiery offense.
No, the Bears, I like the Bears.
Jack's laughing. Jack, you don't know what you're talking about.
I dislike the Bears.
No, the Bears did great this
The Bears, Mitchell Trubisky. Trust me, week two, Mitchell Trubisky is going to shred Pete Carroll's defense.
No, Ryan Pace has done incredible.
If the Bears don't come in last in the NFC North, I will...
The Lions are going in last. I'm a Lions homer for all you podcast listeners, but the Lions are coming in last. I will straight up say that. The Bears are going to be...
Matt Patricia,
No. I mean, there's been no Bill Belichick coordinator that's done a good job as a coach.
Fair enough.
The Bears are too good at barely making not the Bears. The Lions are too good at barely making the playoffs.
But that's the Jim Caldwell era, which is now over, and now we realize that their roster is just bad. You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Matt Stafford's great, but I don't think the Lions are gonna be very good.
So,
but Bears, Cowboys, Cardinals, Rams is all losses. They'll beat the Raiders because I don't think John Gruden's gonna be very good either. It's 2-4. They'll lose to the Lions, even though I think the Lions are going to be bad. 2-5. Lose to the Chargers, Rams, Packers, Panthers, Niners, Vikings, Niners. That's all losses, in my opinion. Right?
Yeah, that's tough. Niners are going to be good. I think Niners,
I think they're going to... They could
be wild.
I think the only teams that they can beat on this schedule are the Broncos, the Raiders, the Chiefs, probably the Lions, and then the Cardinals once. That's five wins. And so, I think maybe they'll get an upset over some other bigger team who we don't realize is bad yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm leaving room to bear with, because maybe Josh Rosen is good or whatever, and the Cardinals steal one of those games. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the Seahawks can go 5-11, and it's not even that hot of a take.
So the Seahawks, every single year I think the Seahawks are gonna be absolute trash.
And they always somehow find a way to either make the playoffs or barely miss the playoffs, like they did last year. I thought they were going to be a 5-11 team, and they somehow just barely won a bunch of games. So I'm a fan of this hot take. I think that they will be trash, but once again, they won't be.
Yeah, I agree with Jack. They should be, but they're not. Their offensive line is actually just really bad.
All right, well, we shall see. Christian, what do you got for us?
All right, so my hot take is Alvin Kamara is going to be the league MVP this year.
Ooh.
And I think he's going to...
That's a spicy take.
He's going to break the streak of the past 5 years of quarterbacks winning the MVP. And after that, I don't even remember. I think it's just Adrian Peterson in 2012. I don't even remember. I think it was LaDainian Tomlinson. Was the last running back.
If I had to pick a first round running back to win MVP, Alvin Kamara would probably be last on my list, and I think David Johnson would probably.
Well,
be
David Johnson's coming back from injury, but
let
me just.
So did Adrian Peterson.
Right. Let me lay down the stats real quick. So last year, Kamara, off of 120 touches, got 728 rushing yards, and hit 826 receiving yards off 81 receptions as a running back. Those are unreal numbers. Like, I mean...
So he's due for regression.
There's no... But the problem is, he wasn't even featured until the second half of the season. He wasn't even... No one knew Alvin Kamara until the second half of the season. The fact that he put up these numbers in half a season, practically, maybe three quarters if you really want to push it, is just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, Deion Sanders even said that, like, this kid should be in the MVP conversation right now. With Mark Ingram not there for the first four games, he's not gonna get incredible amount of touches, but he will be there and he will get the touches he needs to get for MVP. And I think he's a dual threat running back like we've never seen before. He's a power runner. He's an agile runner. He's incredible. The Saints have a great O-line and a great passing attack to counter the defenses. I think it's a recipe waiting to happen.
Jack is raising his hand. Yes, Jack.
So my reasoning for why this is so unbelievably wrong is that the Saints, if for me, MVP is a it's a most valuable player. So it's like the player. If you don't have that player, it's absolutely destroys your team. Mm-hmm. The Saints have two such good running backs that even if Alvin Kamara puts up eye popping numbers, it makes no difference whether he's there or not because no, Mark Ingram would...
I disagree. Do you remember the Saints last year before Alvin Kamara? Were they in the playoffs?
No.
No, they were were not even... Before last year, no one thought the Saints were going to be good. Alvin Kamara, it was a combination
but
of
as
both
a running back,
the defensive...
As a running back, the running back game has been good. Everyone going into last season thought the running back game was going to be good for a different reason. They didn't think it was going to be Alvin Kamara per se, but Adrian Peterson and
if you're going to go off of that token, then last year's MVP should have been David Johnson, because David Johnson wasn't there. He was easily the most. I mean, I'm kidding.
The reasoning is that he wasn't.
But that's
there.
Not
the thing. Like,
no, no,
he
no,
wasn't
the,
valuable
the point,
because
the
he wasn't
point,
there.
The point is that. That's not what MVP has been in the past.
Russell Wilson can will
for
the Seahawks
running back,
to be better than...
Russell Wilson
needs
to be MVP.
Because
they
should be 5-11.
So here's the thing. So for a running... It's a quarterback league. For a running back to be MVP, they need to absolutely carry their team. Adrian Peterson was the last non-quarterback to win MVP. He was 9 yards short of an NFL record.
Right.
He absolutely carried that bike. That Vikings team.
Where is Christian Ponder now?
Yeah. That Vikings team was so unbelievably
Drew Brees
garbage.
Is so much better than Christian Ponder.
Right, but Drew Brees is getting old. I'm telling you, the shift
so
will happen.
Unbelievably bad. I think it's either going to be a quarterback like Russell Wilson, who's just going to somehow carry the Saints, or
no,
not the Saints.
No, Russell Wilson, I agree. No, Russell Wilson should have been an MVP one of these.
But last year. Carson Wentz could be good. I don't think that the Eagles are going to do as well this year because of the curse of their division where no team wins more than 1 year in a row. I think they probably will break
well,
that.
Well, I mean, I say we wait.
That in itself is a hot take. What's your hot take, Jack?
Okay, so I have a few hot takes. My first hot take is it is a doozy. The Cleveland Browns win 4 or 5 games this year.
Win 4 or 5.
That's reasonable.
That's not a hot take.
That's not a hot take. They have a good team.
They don't have a good team.
Okay, they're the Browns. But when you take a look at their offense.
Hugh Jackson sucks. How is he still the head coach after going, what?
0-16.
Okay, take a look.
No, not even 0-16. He's 1-31.
He's 1-31.
He's 1-31.
The Browns.
How does any head coach maintain that?
The Browns.
Are you kidding me? How are you still employed?
In past years, the Browns have been one. They're so god awful. Just offensively and defensively, they've sucked. Their offense this year, after going out and getting players, they have Baker Mayfield, number one overall pick. And
yeah,
Tyrod
which
Taylor
was a horrible pick.
No, I like Baker Mayfield.
I disagree.
I like Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is a born winner.
I like it a
bad
lot.
Bad pick.
Baker Mayfield is going to break
the Browns.
Not
what the Browns
needed. That's a hot take.
Absolutely
for you.
Not what the Browns needed.
I like him a lot.
Not what the Browns needed.
I don't think any quarterback is going to do better than Baker Mayfield's going to do.
I disagree.
I think Sam Darnold would have busted in.
I disagree. There.
I think Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen both would have busted in.
Sam Darnold is the only one that has the poise to take over that job, I believe. But that's...
He doesn't... I don't think he's as much of a leader as Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not grabbing his nuts.
So, at running back, you have Carlos Hyde and Nick Chubb, who I think will be pretty solid. That's a good duo. At receiver, they have a weirdly really good receiving core this year.
Jarvis Landry, Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman.
Man, I don't think Jarvis.
Joku
is
at tight end.
You got Jarvis underneath and like Josh Gordon at the top. That's a good combo.
I think they win 5 games this year. They have a tough schedule, but I think they win 5 games, including one.
Miles Garrett probably takes the next step.
I think they win one shocker.
Yeah,
but definitely Pittsburgh.
It could be Pittsburgh Week 1. They play Pittsburgh.
I actually don't hate that.
They play Pittsburgh at home Week 1. I think they're going to beat the Steelers Week 1.
They could beat the Steelers Week 1.
Right.
Wow, that's great.
And then my second hot take is I think Rookie of the Year will be Calvin Ridley.
Okay. We're ending this podcast right now.
Yeah, that's very hot.
Absolutely wrong.
Who do you think it will be then?
Saquon Barkley. That even
hot take for another podcast.
Is that
I don't
even
like Saquon
a
Barkley.
Question?
All right, this podcast has gone off the rails. For Christian Yegnazar, for Jack Ensminger, I'm John Murphy. We will see you guys
Calvin
next
Ridley
week with an episode about quarterbacks. All right, thank you for listening. Have a nice
Saturday morning/afternoon/rest of your week.
/whatever day you listen to.
/we don't have a sign off yet.
thank you for listening. Love you guys.
Love you guys. Bye.